And you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
For this program comes from Greater Madison Music City. Through proven strategies, success stories, and challenges, the Music City Circuit, presented by Greater Madison Music City, will highlight music tourism's role as a driver of urban transformation, offering valuable insights on how to shape our future as a music city while empowering our local musicians and music-related businesses. The Music City Circuit, coming soon to select streaming platforms. More information at ourgmmc.org.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Welcome to the WORT Access Hour. I am Heather Allen, and I am the Senior Policy Director at Elevate, a nonprofit working to ensure that all people and communities have access to affordable heat, cooling, power, and water in their homes and communities, no matter who they are or where they live. Tonight, I'm very excited that we're going to be diving into a subject that touches every household. It's energy efficiency and affordability, how to make your home more energy efficient, how to lower those energy bills, and how a community resource, the Dane County Efficiency Navigator, is helping some residents and landlords do exactly that. Tonight, we have three fantastic guests joining me. Claire Olekshek, Executive Director of Sustain Dane, the sustainability organization in Dane County and Madison, Wisconsin. Sustain Dane is making multifamily housing affordable and resilient through the Efficiency Navigator, a partnership with Sustain Dane and Elevate. John Viner, a Senior Program Manager with Elevate, leads affordable housing projects, workforce development efforts, and key partnerships to improve building energy and water performance. And Ali Berenyi, Elevate's construction project manager, who brings the day-to-day on-the-ground perspective of what it means to actually help families make these upgrades happen. So we'll be spending the full hour together talking about energy in our homes, so get comfortable. This conversation is packed. Thank you for being here today, all three of you. I want to start with a question for you, Claire. What is the Efficiency Navigator, and how did it get started?
Thank you for having me. So the Efficiency Navigator program is working in affordable apartment housing, and it's helping to make it more efficient, reduce those costs so that it costs less for residents, and make it more resilient as we're addressing the changes in our environment, the changes that are coming from climate change. So what this program came out of was an understanding that energy use in our buildings is one of the largest contributors to carbon, to climate change in our community, and trying to get together and start thinking creatively about how we could address that. Affordable housing, and especially the affordable housing that we work in, unsubsidized affordable housing, has been left out of a lot of the energy efficiency programs over the years. Sustained Dane is, you know, always paying attention to, you know, how can we be helping the community learn more, connect, and take action for sustainability. But we did not have any programs specifically in this area. And your chief strategist, Abby, moved to Madison about 6 or 7 years ago. And when she moved here, you know, she was, you know, passionate doing this work and said, I want to be contributing in my local community too. So she started to talk with different stakeholders, from people, and she kept hearing, you should really connect with Sustained Dane, right? They're the sustainability organization. They have deep roots in the community. They could be a really great local partner. So Abby and I got together, we hit it off, and you know, really saw how important this work could be for moving the community forward. We spent about a year doing stakeholder interviews, doing data analysis about what the housing stock looked like here, and then out of that developed the first year of piloting the program in our community.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you found in that analysis? What were the issues that cropped up in the data?
So the first thing we did was looked at the housing stock itself. So about 50% of occupied housing units in Madison were built before 1980. So, you know, a time when there was really low levels of insulation or, you know, electrification, oftentimes buildings that haven't been upgraded. The housing also in Madison is split about 50-50 between single family and a multifamily apartment. So when we're looking at, then when we looked at the affordable housing in the area, which is about 86,000 units, we found that over 90% of it is unsubsidized affordable. So what that means is this is the small 4-unit, 8-unit buildings, you know, owned by one person here and there. Oftentimes you might see these as like the brick buildings lined up together. So when you're looking at addressing affordable housing in Madison, that means we have to look at what is our existing building stock and how can we make it more efficient so that we can take down those utility bills and make it easier for people to continue living there and afford what it costs to live there.
Thank you, Claire. Could you tell us a little bit about the landlords you interact with and what draws them to the program?
Yeah, it's really been a joy to get to know a lot of the owners of these buildings. You know, I'd say the first thing is that, you know, these are owners that we found really do care about creating a comfortable, safe, and affordable place for their residents to live. You know, a lot of them are, you know, one person or maybe a couple that, you know, bought one building at some point and have been providing it as housing in the community. They oftentimes do not have a lot of margin or available funding to take care of improving the building. You know, a lot of times it's, you know, waiting for if something were to break that they need to fix. And when they look at weatherization or energy efficiency, a lot of times those projects are either out of their budget, they don't really understand maybe what the next steps would be, or they don't have the time to dig into that. And the decrease in the utility bills is going to go directly to the residents, which is great, but we call that the split incentive, where there isn't payback or making back the money that's invested in upgrading.
Right, because if you own your own home and you make investments to save on your utility bill, like by insulating your home a little bit better or sealing up air leaks, you see those utility bills drop directly. That's the, you invest and you see the utility bills drop. But if you're a landlord and the renter is paying the utility bill, the landlord doesn't get to benefit from those lowered utility bills directly.
Right. We also work with property owners that have agreed to the community benefit that they're going to keep their rents at or below the HUD fair market rate for at least 5 years after working with us. So they appreciate and they understand the benefits that they are getting from being part of the program, and their commitment is to continue to provide affordable housing to the community.
Great. Thank you. All right. Alan, Allie, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about some examples of the types of problems. So someone signs up for the program, you're working with a landlord. What are the types of problems you're encountering that they want to solve and they want you to help them solve?
I would piggyback on what Claire is saying. I was actually one of the owners of a building, and my story is my wife and I bought one of these brick three-unit buildings probably some 10 years ago now. And generally, like, it is very difficult to afford to improve it. I knew the thing needs help. It's from the 1980s or something, 1970s, actually. I knew it needed some improvements. The insulation was bad. It's drafty. The windows are still, they're actually still pretty bad. The heating system was not super efficient. It was only one person controlled the heat for the entire building. So a lot of these things they're just challenging. They're very expensive to fix. And so when I found the program, it was because I wanted to fix these things. I wanted it to be less drafty in the house. I wanted it to be, actually wanted to split up the heating and cooling system so that everybody had control over it, because it was, nobody was happy with what the temperature of the house was ever, seemingly. But exactly the problem that it's expensive, and I knew the benefit would go to the tenants, not to me personally. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But it still didn't mean I had the money to do it. And I think that's the case for a lot of these owners. They don't have dozens of buildings. They're not corporations or, you know, huge. They have a couple of buildings, and maybe, you know, they mostly have a day job that they're going to. And so having the efficiency navigator able to sort of take the reins of this program, figure out what the building needs, because they probably don't know, figure out what would be a good path forward through the building assessment and all that. And then having the efficiency navigator sort of, you know, find the contractors, get the bids, and just shepherd the project through is it's just huge for an owner who doesn't really have the time or bandwidth to do that. So I think that's really what's excellent about the program. I signed up, and I was at the place with my building, and I'm a builder. So I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do. I wanted to improve the insulation in the attic. I knew it was bad. I wanted to change the heating and cooling system. And so when I signed up, I wanted new windows. I tried to get new windows for my building, but it wasn't part of the scope of the program at the time. And so then somebody from Sustain Dane reached out to me and said, hey, we need to have a conversation about your building and you, and you know, are you sort of an intake call to see if I was appropriate for the program, whether my building was appropriate for the program. So I cleared that hurdle, apparently. My rents are below market rate. It was all fine. Then there's somebody comes and does a building assessment, looks at the mechanicals, looks at the insulation in the attic, you know, just looks at the outside, et cetera, writes up a report. That happens with Elevate. Elevate is the one that you know, does the assessment, writes up the report, and then goes back to Sustain Dane to make decisions about, like, which buildings they want to work on, what measures they want to take in those buildings. And so lots of back and forth. And I ended up, the program actually funded for me and my building back in 2024, it was the air sealing and insulation in my attic, some air sealing and insulation in my basement. And they were able to help me swap out. I had gas stoves in three apartments and swap them into electric. So the running the wiring and actually purchasing the stoves. And I got to tell you, that was a huge thing for me, because I went into one of the apartments that had been lived in by the same person for 50 years. We kind of inherited this tenant. And when he moved out, I walked into his apartment and I was like, wow, this place smells like gas. And it And I just immediately shut off that stove and capped off the gas. But I was just like, this is a problem. And so I feel so much better about the fact that everybody just has electric stoves now.
Thank you for that, Allie. And for reminding us that there are a bunch of health and safety things that you might come across while you're in the field. John, could you tell us a little bit about what you find when you're in the field? What do you learn from the property owners and renters? What do you find about the condition of the buildings?
We might get in about 20 buildings, and these are all old buildings that need some type of help or some type of support, often even before we do weatherization work, and that's part of the assessment. So every building is different. Every building, of course, needs some type of weatherization work, and there's consistency through those. But the way we look at a building to make sure there isn't health and safety to begin with, or durability issues such as rotting wood, materials, pests, etc., so that we understand that building before we get moving on it, right? And then it's all, then it becomes preventative type things. What can we do to make it better? So you can imagine every building being a little bit different, getting in, you know, 20 or more buildings throughout the year. You come across a lot, right, in terms of whether it's comfort and drafty units, or whether it's moisture concerns. I think Claire and Allie did a great job in setting the stage in terms of Allie's stories about the things that can go wrong, right? And we really want to prevent those and come away with a better building for sure. Some of the things in the stories where we have to address mold-related issues, lead-related issues, asbestos, right? So those things are always on the forefront of my mind to make sure that those are all addressed. And often we have some interaction with the tenants. We could always do more interaction with the tenants, but they often don't know they're living in an unsafe condition. And that's what's often concerning, such as Allie as a property owner not knowing that there's likely a gas leak within this building that we will take a look at and solve, right? So it's as much the reaction and the appreciation that we see from the owners that really care about giving back to the community that we see, we recognize, we appreciate, and really want to support.
Could you tell us about specific scenarios? I have in my notes here that Hank and Janet started saving $20 a month on their utility bills after the building went through the program. Can you tell me about how you were able to drive those utility bills down, and how did you help them save that money?
The $20 a month, we can easily get that simply by insulating an attic that's under-insulated, right? So part of our analysis has to be what's the starting point, right? There are some people that have low energy bills. They're not going to save as much if they have high energy bills. In that particular case, I'm trying to recall, but I believe that was like an R11 attic. The insulating value code today was put in reference might be R49 if you have raised hill trusses. So there's another term if you have specific trusses in new construction. R49 is the minimum that you need to put in there. And if you have an R11, well, then that's quite a bit lower than an R49, which is an insulating value, and it's a value at which heat is lost per square foot through the surface area of that insulation. Right. We can insulate and easily save $20 a month, so that's not hard to do for our program. We readily do that, and we do that most often. On top of that $20 a month, they're probably we look at the air tightness of the building, of course, the air sealing. If we can do air sealing safely, we do it, right? And we often have to put in ventilation to accompany that and make sure that other systems in place, right? So the term house as a system, or looking at a whole house approach, is really a foundation for what we must do, right? And taking a look at how these buildings work. And that's before we air seal, we need to predict what that might do to the air exchange rate in the building, the fresh air, the indoor air quality, et cetera. So air sealing saves money, insulating saves money. We make sure the attic is vented so it lasts a really long time, right? So we have to put all those pieces together.
If anybody has ever like watched TV or listened to the radio, all these window companies are out there trying to sell you windows because it's going to save you 25% on your utility bills. I'm not sure that that's entirely true. I think that's a bit of an oversell of that. But I will say this. A lot of these buildings have the windows that they were originally built with. They are a single pane of glass. They have a metal frame. They are, I mean, when I see them, I'm like, this is what a storm window looks like. It's not the window for a, it shouldn't be the window for a house, but that's what it is. Very thin, very drafty. They might not lock very well, et cetera. So when you replace those windows, I mean, one, of course, we're going to replace that with a much more efficient window. It'll be at least two panes of glass, probably three panes of glass, tri-pane. So it will just be a more efficient window. But the thing that the owners, or not the owners, I'm sorry, the thing that the tenants experience is it's not so drafty to sit by the on the couch by the window. They can do that now. They'll comment on like, wow, it's so much quieter in here. It makes a huge difference. And people, like those are the things about the windows. And, oh, I can open the window when I want to, and I can also close the window when I want to, and I can lock the window when I want to. I mean, those are just sort of the, those are the things that people experience mm-hmm. about having new windows. Whether I think it's rare for them to see that big 25% energy savings. I don't personally think that that's realistic. But the experience of being in a more comfortable house is a huge improvement to the tenant's life.
Claire, you mentioned that a number of the properties do not have air conditioning. It was never put in, or the HVAC systems were too old for air conditioning. As we experience that weather is getting more extreme and we have more extremely hot days, this becomes an important health issue, access to air conditioning.
So when we're looking at these buildings, you know, we're thinking about, you know, is there a way as we're doing improvements that air conditioning could be added? And if we're including that with weatherization, you know, can we still keep those bills at or lower than they currently are with also having the AC? We have been able to move 45-year-old furnaces in one building over to a air source heat pump system. So also, you know, thinking about moving more towards electric, really efficient electric cooling and help with that need for air conditioning.
What are the basic facts about air source heat pumps that listeners should know about if they don't already? And I'm gonna ask John to just tell me at the highest level, like, what is an air source heat pump?
Mm-hmm.
What are the two basic types? Because I'm pretty sure there's a whole home system or a standalone unit that you can just plop in. So tell us a little bit about air source heat pumps.
So air source heat pumps, first and foremost, they use electricity to heat the home, right? So we need to know that they can displace some amount of natural gas, or they can displace 100% of the natural gas. You can replace your whole gas furnace, install air source heat pump, use electricity really efficiently, right? So if you think of an electric baseboard heater as 100% efficient, we'll just use it, say it's 100% efficient. A heat pump is, let's say, on average 300% efficient. So it really improves the efficiency in the way we use electricity to heat, and that's a good thing. Air source heat pumps actually will take heat out of the air outside your building. Even if it's 0 degrees outside, there's heat in that 0 degree air. It will absorb it into refrigerant and then compress that heat back out. So essentially it's moving heat from one place to the other. Even though you might think it's really cold outside, there are BTUs, there are elements of heat in that air that those heat pumps are really good at grabbing and moving those into your house. And then vice versa, in the summertime, it's extracting, it's taking heat from inside your house and moving it to the outside.
So if you add an air source heat pump, you are automatically adding the ability to cool your home in addition to heat it.
Correct. Yep.
So it looks like a standalone portable window AC unit or a central AC.
Looks exactly like your air conditioner sitting outside if you have a central air conditioner. Mm-hmm. Really looks from the exterior often very similar to that. And it just has the capability to switch the direction of the refrigerant flow, which in air conditioning, it takes heat from inside your house, moves it outside. There's a valve that simply switches the direction of the refrigerant flow to take heat from the exterior to the interior.
If you want to shift a building away from gas heating to an air source heat pump, what sort of evaluation do you have to do to ensure that transitioning to heat pump is a good choice for that building?
We're looking at individual units that have their own maybe forced air system. So we have, I think you mentioned two types, right?
Yeah,
so there's forced air heating and cooling systems, and then there's the ductless systems. We've been talking as much about the ducted systems that have, most of us have a gas furnace with air distribution system of ductwork. And then we connect that heat pump to that air distribution system and have heating and cooling. The other type is simply a ductless system that is really handy, really efficient to put into rooms that are hard to heat and cool. If they have that independently ducted system for their unit in a multifamily building, it's, we likely can get one installed. And if we want more efficient cooling, it's just, I think there's a trend, air conditioning manufacturers someday will not manufacture air conditioners. They'll only manufacture heat pumps, right? So that could be a prediction in the future, right? Manufacturers are looking at that. And because why manufacture just an air conditioner when you can actually do heating and cooling with that same unit for very little modification, right? So those trends are probably going to come about someday.
Something Claire? Else, something else we think about is we have an opportunity at this moment to change out the system. And if we are not moving forward into an air source heat pump, into an electrified system, it could be another 20, 30, or 40 years before that opportunity is there again. So as we're evaluating it, I would say, 95% of the time, that is the recommendation that makes the most sense from our standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And it's really important for us as a program not to raise costs to the tenants, and that's paramount. And natural gas is, I'll say, inexpensive compared from a heating source compared to electricity. So we are installing heat pumps, but in the coldest parts of the winter, we're switching over to run that gas furnace because that is least expensive. We recognize that. We work with that. There are controls to keep that heat pump off when we think that it's going to cost more to the tenants.
That's a really interesting point. In my role at Elevate, I'm engaged with issues at the Public Service Commission, and we are very aware that the price of gas, natural gas, which while low in states like Wisconsin relative to heating homes with electricity, natural gas prices continue to fluctuate and to rise. The gas price spikes can be very impactful on our utility bills. There is a growing awareness that the volatility of gas prices poses a cost risk to all ratepayers, everyone who has a utility bill, and that gas will only continue to rise in costs. So switching to electricity now can help hedge against the vulnerability of the shocks of the spikes in gas prices.
Electricity prices will rise and gas prices will rise.
That's
the trend.
And we will. On gas going higher, faster.
We like having flexibility, right? So now all of a sudden, you have the ability, if you are a property owner or a homeowner, to watch fuel prices, to watch energy costs, which I think is only a smart thing to do, to watch that volatility. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin imports all its coal, imports all its natural gas. We don't have those fuels in Wisconsin. And I think that it's really important to be conscious of the energy that we use. And now having that flexibility really, really does demand understanding fuel cost and using it wisely and knowing when to use one over the other.
You will never make renewable natural gas. That's not a thing. You can make renewable electricity. Now, the fact that all of our electricity, or even not a very large portion of our electricity here in Wisconsin, is made from renewable energy, that's a big topic. That's a bit out of our scope, I think, here. But if you're heating and cooling with electricity, there is a possibility that someday that's made from renewable energy, and there's zero possibility that your natural gas furnace will ever be made from renewable energy.
Okay, Ellie, I got to stop you right there. Are you aware that Wisconsin dairies process their waste in biodigesters? And those biodigesters produce methane, which is called renewable natural gas in that case. It's created from the waste products produced by animal manure. It's a small segment of our energy market, but it's an important one here in Wisconsin. In addition to biodigesters, which provide renewable natural gas through harnessing the waste products from animal manure, there are also really impressive feats of engineering right here in Dane County working with renewable natural gas from methane produced by landfills. In fact, in 2019, the Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables constructed a $29 million renewable natural gas, or RNG, processing facility, which uses cutting-edge technology to transform landfill biogas into renewable natural gas. Landfills are one of the leading sources of methane emissions, a potent natural gas that traps heat in our atmosphere. And we can greatly reduce those harmful emissions by capturing methane before it's emitted into the atmosphere and using it as a resource. So that's one place where Dane County is truly on the cutting edge, and we should all know about that really impressive RNG program here, right here in our backyard. You are correct. Renewables are a larger share of energy production here in Wisconsin and around the country. We have doubled or tripled solar capacity right here in Wisconsin just in the last 10 years. And that is energy that's generated here in the Badger State. It does not require importing fuels to Wisconsin. Solar and wind are the cheapest energy sources to produce. They don't, even without any subsidies, they are the cheapest. The grid is generally becoming greener as more renewables come on the grid and more coal plants are retired because they are too costly to run. However, just very recently, as energy needs are expanding, for example, with data centers, and then the federal administration changing policies to re-energize coal plants and build more natural gas plants, the picture of the trends of our energy grid is getting increasingly complicated. The trends in the last few decades across the country have been an increasingly lower emissions grid powered by a larger portion of solar and wind projects and a smaller portion of coal and gas. But you might in fact be aware that this summer, the Public Service Commission approved two new methane gas projects for more than $1.5 billion. In May of 2025, the commission approved the construction of the 1,100-megawatt plant in Oak Creek and a 128-megawatt plant in Paris, Wisconsin. These two new plants in the We Energies territory in southeastern Wisconsin are just the first steps in a series of additional gas plants proposed around the state, in part to power data centers. And we could do a whole another show on that. But what I would like to get back to are the basic steps for people in their own homes to begin to reduce their energy bills. Ellie, what are the first things people should be thinking about?
Well, I mean, I'm at the risk of sounding like someone's mother, because I am, I'd start with turn the lights off when you're not in the room. You know, doing basic stuff like turning off things that you're not using.
Okay.
Please. Switching. So for a tenant who doesn't have an capital investment in the building, right? What can you do? They can't go around caulking or anything like that. But they can. Any fixtures they have that don't have LEDs in them should have LEDs. And honestly, there are programs out there. Focus on Energy will give you LEDs for free. So go to the Focus on Energy site. You can sign up to get a little packet of energy-saving you know, a couple LEDs, couple like little window insulation kit. So another one, I happen to live in an extremely old building. Windows are poor. Putting plastic on the windows, I mean, it's not no great. It's not that much fun, but it makes a big difference to how drafty the window is in the winter. So those are some pretty easy ones. And then once the windows are a little less drafty, then maybe you're able to turn the heat down a little bit in the winter because it doesn't feel as bad in the house mm-hmm. when it's less drafty. You know, in the summer, you know, I try to keep the windows covered in the during the day so that we're not getting a lot of sun coming in the window. So just real, those are some real basic things right there.
I think you're right, Allie. It's heating and cooling that space that we call our home takes a lot of energy. So how can you be comfortable in your home and, you know, by making those changes you said and reduce the energy you're using to heat and cool it. So if it's an extra sweater and you turn, you know, down a little bit or really savor that warm summer air because you've been waiting all winter for it. but that, you know, that's an important way. The other thing is to think about the thermostat, right? You know, when you're not at home, can you be turning down the level of temperature, the heat or the cool that you're asking for in your home? And that could be with a smart thermostat or just with, you know, a routine of, you know, got my keys, got my, you know, umbrella, and I turn down what my temperature is until I come back home.
Welcome back to the WORT Access Hour. I'm Heather Allen, your host. I am with Elevate. And I'm here with my colleagues, John Viner and Allie Berenier, also from Elevate, and Claire Olekshek, the Executive Director of Sustain Dane. We're talking about the program called the Efficiency Navigator. It's making multifamily housing affordable and resilient, a partnership between our two organizations, Sustain Dane and Elevate. The goals of the program are to address housing resilience, equity, and climate change, and we provide complementary efficiency assessments and step-by-step navigation of implementation. The program is for renter-occupied buildings with rents affordable to residents at or below 80% area median income. This housing stock is known as Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing, or NOAA. Along the way, we'll get great tips about how to save money on your utility bills through efficiency measures and electrification. So let's jump back in.
I think an initial step is really an assessment to understand your energy use and whether you take that on yourself, mm-hmm. because there are tools for that, mm-hmm. to understand if you are a high user, medium user, or low user, to get a sense of what savings. We can all probably cut back and shut off some lights, et cetera. But if we want to make a really impact, we have to know where we sit and how much energy we are using. So that education is really important. One way to actually do that is MG&E. You can look up your average energy use on MG&E's website. You can look up your neighbor's average energy use. You can find a building that looks like yours on the same block and look up that address and look at average energy use, right? So this is public information. There's no personal information on it, but it's simply average energy use for you. That's one tool. Another tool is focus on energy, and in particular, so the home performance consultants, they can always do a nice energy assessment. Now, if we want to make those improvements now while there's actually Inflation Reduction Act rebates available, where there's literally thousands of dollars, up to $8,000 per heat pump through the Focus on Energy program. So they have their state rebates, they have their federal rebates, and you can stack those. And to stack the federal rebates, you need a detailed site assessment. That's why they do it. So reaching out to Focus on Energy to get that site assessment done gains you access to thousands of dollars of rebates, and we'll let you know what the opportunities are and whether you're a high, low, or medium user. So I think that's really key. We have to use energy in our homes, and there's a certain point where you can't reduce it anymore. And if you live in a small unit, you're frugal with your energy use, you're aware of it, you shut that off. Often there isn't a lot left sometimes. So I just want to, understanding that before you invest thousands in making some improvement, knowing that that's going to make a decent dent in your utility bills is important.
Okay, so
going to focusonenergy.com is a tremendous resource to find free LED light bulbs and kits for saving water with different faucets and things like that. And you can find information about rebates for thousands of dollars for major equipment and or energy assessments.
Yes, there's actually dollars available to discount that assessment for qualified individuals, for sure.
Claire, what are you hearing from landlords and tenants about costs and energy bills?
We're hearing about housing overall, that it's not affordable, right? It is hard to find places to live. It's hard to find affordable places to live. And the energy costs and the utility costs are part of what that budget looks like to be able to live someplace. So, we've heard from residents and from owners about how, I have my rent really low and it costs almost that same amount of rent to pay the utility bills, right? So, there's an awareness that these buildings are old and they've, they're in need. In 2022, Madison did its greenhouse gas inventory, and 19% of the greenhouse gas emissions were coming from residential buildings. So if we're serious about addressing climate change and taking climate action, we have to be improving buildings and improving where people live. If we're serious about addressing affordable housing in our community, we also need to be thinking about not just building new units, but also investing in the ones that are here already, because that is also part of the housing stock that is going to make up the more numbers that we need to provide enough units for people to live in.
How does this Efficiency Navigator program, which helps to insulate and provide air sealing, upgrade HVAC equipment to be more efficient, how does that program, this program, preserve affordable housing?
So, what it's doing is that it is making it, it is confirming this is the place someone wants to live and can live, right? If it is comfortable, if it is affordable, if it is well-maintained, this is a building that can continue on for a long time. For example, there's a building that, we had about $30,000 of work in this building, and it led to a 42% reduction in energy use. And that lives on every single year, that's happening. So that's what we're talking about. It's real numbers. It's impacts that a lot of people don't see, right? It's, in the utility room, or it's in the walls, or it's in the attic. But it substantially changes the experience for someone in their home and the experience of our community, of our environment.
Thank you. All these endeavors require funds. And Allie mentioned how funding can be a barrier to landlords doing these things on their own. How is the program funded?
Yeah. So I would say funding is there, but I'd say close to that is the time and the knowledge, because you have to be ready to jump into learning about your building and having an assessment done and contractors. And both of those, I think, are part of the barriers to do the work. So when we started the program, the funding was a combination of philanthropic dollars. So a large foundation was supporting the work. And then also there was a pilot that we were a part of with the PSC, the Energy Innovation Grant. So that was the first round of funding to kind of understand what kind of housing we had in our community and what the impact could be. We've then had many different funding sources over the year that have helped contribute to it. We've had ARPA funds from the federal government. We've had affordable housing funds that have contributed to the work. We've had capital dollars from municipalities. Program has been run in Madison, in Middleton, and in Fitchburg now. And each community has been a little bit different, but it's kind of a mix of these different funding opportunities and sources.
What trends have you noticed about energy costs over time?
We know that there's an increase in costs, right? And Heather, you mentioned, I think, early on in the show, a 30% increase
in residential electric rates.
In electric rates. Yep. So that's, continuing. But as we think about that, and as a 30% rate, increase in rates and electrical rates while we try to electrify, mm-hmm. right? So then lies a dilemma of doing it well, right? And doing it well means not raising costs, but yet reducing energy use, reducing carbon emissions. All those are really, really important. We know that we've touched on gas prices, and the gas prices have been hanging the last couple of years around averaging about 80 cents a therm, so 80 cents, 100,000 BTUs, which is fairly reasonable. That hasn't changed a whole lot until it gets really cold outside and the utilities have to pay more for natural gas. So I think in the last month, probably in, I think, December or January, please don't quote me on that, but it jumped to like $1.24 a therm. So when it gets coldest outside is when it costs us the most for gas. So that monthly fluctuation that we see on our bills is real, right? When it's really cold outside, our gas prices go up because we use more and the price is increased, right? So we can't really avoid that. The good news is the gas has been fairly steady. That hasn't risen and still cheaper than electricity to heat in the dead of winter, right? We don't want gas prices or utility costs to rise. And that's the push and pull, right, in terms of gas prices versus electric prices. And we know the trend that I've seen over the years is never down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we rarely see those charts go downward over time. No, that's a great point. Okay. So I would like to ask you all, each of you, a big picture question. If you could do one thing, wave a magic wand and do one thing to improve the situation when it comes to the energy we're all using and or our utility bills, what one thing would you do?
So the hill I die on is Wisconsin uses an energy code from 2009. The states around us with pretty similar climates have modernized quite a bit.
Now, when you say energy code, what do you mean?
So the Wisconsin building codes are based off of international energy codes. They're revised every 3 years. That's right, I think, every 3 years, usually making them stricter, making, you know, increasing amounts of insulation. One of the things they've added in the last decade or so is requiring builders to test the home to show that it is not leaking air excessively and to just demonstrate that they have done the things that they say that they're going to do. Wisconsin doesn't require that kind of testing yet. And so that to me, I just feel like, why are we a decade and a half behind Minnesota and Michigan and Illinois? That doesn't make sense to me.
Exactly. The energy industry is always rapidly changing. In my estimation, maybe only data and computers are a faster moving industry. But it's wild to know that our electric code is stuck in 2009 when the energy composition in Wisconsin has changed dramatically since 2009, and yet our codes are still back there.
Yeah, in terms of just air sealing, the building code basically involves the inspector looking at it and saying, yep, looks good, except that you can't see most of the air sealing when the inspector is there. So what looks good? Exactly.
That's a good point. That's a good point. What about you, John? If you could wave a magic wand, what would you do?
I think I would try to move towards decentralizing generation, right? Or even in small production, which could simply mean putting solar on your roof or making it more easily accessible for all so that we have more generation from clean, renewable energy sources, whether it's for an individual home, individual multifamily building, or for a community, finding ways to keep generating from a clean energy source and making that available for all.
So decentralizing from central power plants that are powered by coal or gas to more solar distributed throughout the community that's on the different buildings around the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Finding ways to do that, because our old buildings, we've talked about affordable housing and how important it is to keep our existing buildings really healthy, low energy use. And there's only so much you can do on a reasonable basis before you have to stop, before you start spending real money to build a whole nother wall and to the outside of the existing wall, right? I mean, these things are being done, but they're not really beneficial or something everyone's going to have access to. So we really need to allow people to have this convenience of flipping a switch and turning on and off electricity and having it come from a place that is the clean energy source, but how do you make it affordable and just make it a right that everybody should have access to that?
That's a great one. How about you, Claire?
So, you know, I come from the perspective of increasing the education and the knowledge and the resources. So when I was thinking about this question, what came to mind is I'd like to add a day, a holiday to our calendar, thinking maybe around February 1. It's going to be called Energy Efficiency Day.
Ooh.
Everyone's off work that day. Schools are closed. And we're going to spend that day. You're going to actually look at your utility bill. You're going to put together your favorite thing you want to do. And then, because this is whatever we want to have happen in this world, right?
Yeah.
Then the money's there. You just, you know, you're going to send in an email and say, you know, I'm going to need some help for XYZ. But I think it's, you know, it's kind of taking that pause, like giving that pause mm-hmm. to learn about what your options are and then be able to take action on that.
That's great. An energy efficiency holiday that comes with funding and technical assistance to improve the energy efficiency in your home. Speaking of that, how can people learn more about the Efficiency Navigator program?
Yeah, so on Sustain Dane's website, under our programs and take action, there's the Efficiency Navigator page. And right there, you'll find a link for the really easy application. It's less than 2 minutes. You know, what size of your building? What are your current thoughts on it? And then, as Allie said, we follow up with that, get together, have a deeper conversation, and confirm it's a good fit, and then move into the assessment.
Fabulous. Are you optimistic about expanding the program?
Yeah, at this point, I feel that we've had a really positive impact. Communities are responding well, and this is critical to meeting the sustainability goals within our municipalities. So, yes, I do feel positive about the program.
I guess I would add something that I'm always conscious of in educating tenants or owners is that we can save energy, but it doesn't mean we'll always save money. Mm-hmm. And we have to distinguish that sometimes, especially when we move towards electrification. We install an air source heat pump and we save lots of energy and we save lots of emissions. And there's a lot of good that comes from that. But if it isn't done well, you might not save dollars. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would like more people to think about, right, and to be aware of. The last thing we want is, there's a lot of reasons to install heat pumps, whether it's heat pump water heaters or heat pump space heating. And if economics is the main driver, then go slow and think about that and how that system is controlled, because we don't want people to get upset because they installed a heat pump thinking they're going to save lots of money, right?
How do you prevent sort of accidentally raising utility costs if you install a heat pump? How do you prevent that?
Good question. And I'll back up and start with, if you're heating with electric resistant baseboard heating, mm-hmm. heat pumps are a no-brainer, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to install a heat pump and you're going to save money automatically all the time, every time, if that system is working properly. So that's a key caveat to be aware of. If we are comparing air source heat pumps to natural gas heating systems, then we have to have a temperature, an outdoor temperature, that we will provide a little analysis on, or You can trust your heating contractor, but ask good questions, right? At what temperature should I run the gas furnace versus the air source heat pump? And oftentimes it's running the heat pump on the shoulder seasons. The heat pumps these days are built for our climate, and it's really exciting that they can heat homes below zero and -5 degrees, and it's really awesome, and it's really new market innovation, and I'm all for it. But it's going to cost you more to run it at those lower temperatures than natural gas at the moment. So that's just back to that question. I want to get that out there, because if too many people install and have complaints that they're going to save energy and didn't, that sets us back, right?
Yeah.
From electrification, from emission reductions, from climate change, right? And working and fighting that good fight.
Please.
Well, I just, one thing I want to say is that, like, education of not just the owners, but the tenants. And that is a tricky piece, because tenants change. Mm-hmm. And so owners have to keep educating. And I'll just say, one of my tenants, we have an electric baseboard backup because the heat pump might not be good enough. Well, I met up with him one day and he said, oh, yeah, I just run this thing, the electric baseboard, because he doesn't quite understand what the how to, you know, use the it's a ductless mini split. And I was like, oh, I need to do a little more work here, because I bet his bills are really high, because he's doing the thing that he's familiar with, the easy thing, mm-hmm. cranking a knob on a baseboard heater, because he's not sure about the other one, because that's got a remote control, and I don't know, it's kind of weird.
I think the other thing that we look at and is something to consider is putting in an air source heat pump part of a path to electrify an entire home? And is there even a pathway to possibly remove the gas at a home and take off that monthly cost for the gas line going in? There's been some of the buildings where that has been an option. So, you know, what else is happening in the building, and what are the sources that are needed for it? But that's kind of a next level two analysis of those costs. I also would add that I don't think this work is just about cost, right? It's about quality of life. It's about comfort in the home. It is about, you know, are we doing all we can right now to build a better future for the next generation? And all of these are, you know, part of the thinking for a lot of decisions we make, and that includes what decisions we're making in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a perfect note to end it on. I want to thank my three guests tonight for all of your work upgrading, weatherizing, electrifying homes here in Dane County, and for being on the show to share information about how we can also take our homes to be a little bit more energy efficient and, when possible, electrify. So thank you. Thank you for being on the Access Hour.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
You've been listening to the WRT Access Hour with guests focused on the Efficiency Navigator program from Elevate and Sustain Dane. We thank you for your time. And if you want to learn more about the program, you can find resources at Sustain Dane, Sustain Dane's website, and you can find resources at focusonenergy.com. Thank you and have a good night.
You've been listening to the Access Hour. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not necessarily represent those of the station's board of directors, staff, or programmers. Please remember that this show relies on your ideas. You can submit your idea by clicking on Sign Up to Host an Access Hour in the WORT website. The Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
You've been listening to WORT, Back Porch Broadcasting, Madison.
Hi, we're Daft Punk, and you're listening to WORT, Madison, Wisconsin.
Thanks to you, we had a very successful winter pledge drive. In fact, you blew past our goal and added several new donors to the WORT family. And that's very good news. The bad news? In November, we laid off 2 full-time staff members due to the loss of our CPP grant. During this recently completed pledge drive, we really felt the loss. You were so generous, and we were so short-staffed that we fell behind in many areas. If you pledged and haven't received your thank you note and remittance envelope, it's coming. If you mailed in your check or credit card information or donated online, but haven't received your thank you gift, we will start mailing them out at the end of March. Thank you again for being so generous and for putting us to work. We are not complaining.
The 2026 Wisconsin Film Festival is coming back to Madison, Thursday, April 9th through Thursday, April 16th. This year's festival boasts over 130 films of all shapes and sizes, including the best cinema has to offer from all over the world and right here in Wisconsin. We've got experimental, animated, and student films, as well as documentaries, restored classics, films for kids, and more. With venues like the Bartell Theater and the Barrymore Theater, as well as 4 venues on the UW-Madison campus,